I'm Alan Hardy.
Hi, this is Matty Cash.
Hi, I'm Darren Fletcher.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Welcome to the home of the oldest professional football club in the country.
The expectation of the fans now is to be talking about promotion.
As a team, as a squad of players, we've come a long way.
Goals from Jason Cummings and from Kieran Dowell in that match.
The City Ground's got that special buzz about it.
Obviously, it's such a big club and the fan base is massive.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to Over the Trent, our weekly student podcast, once again covering all things from either side of the Trent, all things Notts County and Nottingham Forest. I'm Liam Kenny and I'm joined in the studio today by Tom Monks, Zoe Burgess, Jimmy Morehouse, Alex Buxton and a special guest from the Nottingham Forest Supporters Trust, Elliot Stanley. And we do have a bumper edition to bring you this week after a busy deadline day from both clubs, but a particularly hectic day at the City Ground that will probably go down in history as the busiest deadline day of the modern era, with plenty of comings and goings. There's county side to tell you about as well, a brief discussion of the recent fixtures from both clubs, as well as all that we'll have a look ahead to the FA Cup fixture tonight, replay between Notts County and Swansea, as well as the weekend fixtures for both clubs. But first things first, looking at Meadow Lane, a few new incomings on deadline day, a particularly big one in the form of Mason Bennett. Zoe, you were actually speaking to Mark Crossley yesterday at the county press conference and he was quite excited about the signing.
Yeah, they seemed really keen and they said that he was definitely wanting to come to county at some point, and I also went to the game on Saturday and they said that they were so keen for him to play, like he was definitely going to come on at any point. And then obviously he scored on his debut as well.
Yeah, of course, a brilliant debut goal from Mason Bennett, of course coming in on loan from Derby. A bit of a shame that he is cup tied tonight, obviously coming on for Derby against Manchester United in the previous round, so he won't be able to feature against Swansea. Alex, do you think they'll miss him tonight up against Swansea?
Yeah, definitely, because I think that Notts County this season really lacks his pace. I mean, Shola Amiobi and John Stead hardly really offer it. I mean, the only really fast player they got is Forte, who doesn't really play from the season, so I think he's adding something they really have lacked this year, and I think he'll definitely be missed like in the game against Swansea today, especially as they want to probably hit them on the counter quite a lot.
Yeah, at the same time, though, I think with the likes of Shola Amiobi and John Stead available up front, I think Kevin Nolan might have stuck with those two potentially anyway, because I can see that Notts County's best chance tonight maybe could be from a set piece. So to have two big men up front, I think might be the way to go. But certainly, I think Mason Bennett could have been a game changer tonight with the pace he's got, so it's a shame that he won't be able to come on.
And of course, and you'd imagine Kevin Nolan would have liked to have rewarded the two big men as well for their solid performances through the cup so far. And you know John Stead's obviously a cert to start, obviously he scored six in his last six and in every round of the cup thus far. There was also a second recruiting on deadline day. Northern Ireland 21 defender Ben Hall signed on loan from Brighton and Hove Albion, 21 year old who has previously played in the Scottish League with Motherwell. Comes at a young age, but he's a bit of an anomaly really, because he is young and he is a Premier League defender, but he has had the experience in a tough league at Motherwell. So how do you rate that signing, Alex?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know when he's played so little games in his career. He's only had 18 games from Motherwell where he has got one goal, but I'm not sure if he'll start. I think it's more that they've lacked cover in the two defensive options. They played Duffy and Brisley, their main two, but when I think it was Duffy who was out injured, I think they were playing Nicky Hunt at centre-back or Elliot Hewitt, so I think they have been struggling a little bit defensively. And I don't necessarily think Ben Hall will be starting every game, but he's definitely going to add to the cover, which is a necessity for County.
And there seems to be a certain blueprint for a type of player when Kevin Nolan is bringing in these youngsters. They like with Noor Hussein now, Ben Hall, George Grant, Ryan Yates, they do all seem to be quite industrious and hardworking. Zoe, would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, obviously, like the big headline is like they've got like the OAP squad. But I think, actually, if you take out like Stead and Shola, they've got so many young players. And I think Kevin knows that in League 2, like the players can use those minutes to build up their career, but also to help the club as well. I think they're keen, like they want the ball. Like we've talked about Mason being quick. I think it's good for the club. Even if they are only on loan, I think they do want to get the minutes in and they do want to help the club as well as help like their own career.
Yeah, and of course a couple of outgoings to bring you about at Notts County FC that sort of happened in the coming days in the run up to deadline day. Hayden Hollis has left and gone to Forest Green Rovers on a permanent deal. Sad to see him go, as obviously he's come through the youth academy and scored some vital goals in the Great Escape last season, so we wish him all the best. And secondly, Curtis Thompson, who
has been sort of out in the dark for the majority of the season, has gone on loan to fellow promotion contenders Wycombe Wanderers, which might later on in the day come back to bite Kevin Nolan, but we'll wait and see with that one. Now, crossing over the Trent to all things at the City Ground, an absolutely mesmeric day that occurred last week. After a 3-0 humbling defeat at home to Preston North End, Ita Karanga claimed that he was actually embarrassed and it was one of the lowest moments of his football career. Following the defeat, the next day, there was an absolute exodus with Matt Mills, Adama Traore and Mustafa Carriol all being moved on a surplus to requirements. A couple of those with their contracts actually being terminated and a few other loans going as well. Just the reaction, Alex, that you think, that was warranted?
Yeah, I think most Forest fans are pretty happy to see the back of all three of them. I mean, all three players have been here during the quite kind of stagnant last few seasons of Forest, and I think just on the social media, all the fans were saying, I'd happily drive him there myself. So I think they're very happy with the outgoings.
Very much so. And Jimmy, just a quick word on the incomings on that day, to be fair. We've got, where do we start? You know, we've got Figueiredo. I know he was the day before, but we'll count him as well. Experienced defender coming in from Sporting Lisbon, a bit of quality.
Certainly. There's a lot of signings that have been brought in, and I think what's most noticeable for me is how, well, you could say experienced, you could say maybe old, but they've got a lot of the like 29, 30-year-olds coming in who have got Premier League experience, and you know, a couple of them I think Karanka will have worked with before, so he wants them to come in because he wants to. Clearly, he needs to reshape and needs a reshuffle of the side if he wants to be able to implement his own style of play. So I think all these signings coming in can only be a good thing for Forest, especially with the experience that they'll bring.
The only thing I found a bit surprising is they didn't bring in a centre-back. I mean, they let Matt Mills go, who might not have been a great defender for them, but he was okay cover, and especially given that their two starting backs, Joe Worrell and Michael Manson, have had kind of a mixed bag of form this year. I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't looked to strengthen in that department, and they've really focused instead on midfield, which we all thought they had quite a lot of players in that department.
So yeah, if we run through the signings one by one, this will really back up Jimmy's point of the experience. So first of all, we've got Jack Colback coming in on loan from Newcastle, 28-year-old midfielder. Obviously, it was instrumental in Newcastle's promotion back to the Premier League when he played down there. That'll really help the likes of Bouchalakis and Ben Osborne, I believe, with his experience coming in. Then we've got a former Red coming back, Adeline Guedera, the Algerian international, who of course has signed a 2.5-year contract. He's now 32, comes with bags of Championship and Premier League experience as well. And then the next one brought in was Joe Lolly from Huddersfield, 25-year-old winger. Jimmy, Joe Lolly, interesting player, has been sort of frozen out in the dark at Huddersfield for the majority part of this season, but a lot of their fans were actually surprised that he was let go for £4.5 million. How do you see that one turning out?
It was an interesting one for me because he's a player who came with a good reputation when he joined Huddersfield, and he sort of was in and out of the side for a few years there, I think. And it seems, as you say, that Huddersfield did still rate him quite highly, but clearly he's a lad who wants to play football, and he's not really getting that in the Premier League. I think he did score against West Ham the other day, but other than that, he's barely been playing for Huddersfield. And I think David Wagner, even though he probably did rate him quite highly, felt that, you know, he did want to play football. So letting him go to Forest, I think, is a good thing, because Lolly will want to play football there, and I think he spoke about how he wanted to stay there for a long time. So I think what Forest do need is that stability, and I think Lolly's a player who can do well for Forest and stay there for a few years, hopefully.
Yeah, I think Lolly's a perfect signing at the moment for Forest. I mean, I'm not sure if he's the kind of player who can make the step up to the Premier League. I think he's a bit of an Antti Nokkar, who's a really good Championship player but can't quite cut it at Premier League level. So I think it worked both for Huddersfield and for the player himself and for Forest, obviously. So I think he will be a top signing in the long run for Forest.
Yeah, and you mentioned the long-term stability there, Jimmy. Obviously signed a 4.5-year deal. We spoke to him last week at the press conference, and he really did see, sort of bought into the Karanka project that Karanka is trying to progress at Nottingham Forest. And now, in one of the most eyebrow-raising moves of deadline day, which sent alarm bells ringing around the Cardiff sort of fan base, Lee Tomlin, who's highly regarded as one of the best players in their squad, has come on loan to Forest, with Jamie Ward moving the other way. Alex, what was your take on that?
I mean, Lee Tomlin is a quality Championship level player, but I think he did struggle for form at Cardiff. I think there are questions about his attitude. Yeah, he was a little bit overweight. He wasn't really kind of pulling his large amounts of weight to Cardiff City. So I think it depends on the management style, really, from Karanka. If he can get the best out of Lee Tomlin, I think that deal is certainly going to work out for Forest. I mean, he's performed at Middlesbrough, Peterborough, and really Bristol City during his time in the Championship. So I do think it's a good swap for Forest as long as they can kind of get him on the straight and narrow.
And Jimmy, Costel Pantelimon coming in from Watford on loan after they terminated his loan at Deportivo La Coruña. 31-year-old, once again, so plenty of experience. 6'8". So this should take a little bit of the pressure off Jordan Smith, you think?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, as you say, Pantelimon's 6'8". He's always been renowned and probably best well-known for his incredible height. And as you say, he's another experienced player. Pantelimon, you know, he's played for the likes of Manchester City before. So I think coming in, he certainly either will challenge for that first place spot in net for Forest. So I think, yeah, certainly Pantelimon is only a good signing again for Forest there.
I think this is good in two ways for Forest. I think one, Jordan Smith's been coming under a bit of flack from Forest fans this season, and he is still young. I think Forest fans forget that because he's been starting so much recently, but I think it'll definitely relieve a bit of the pressure on him having someone who potentially step in for a few games, and it also should push on his performances by having someone to challenge him. He hasn't really had much competition this year. I mean, for their other keeper, Stephen Henderson's now gone out on loan, and he was hardly providing much kind of competition for Jordan Smith. So I definitely think Pantelimon will definitely not only relieve a bit of pressure but also hopefully spur Jordan Smith to improve his performances.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be beneficial for Jordan Smith, and you are right that he has come in under some flak from Forest fans this season, quite unfairly in my opinion, because people are quick to forget, and of course he made that terrific save last season that actually kept Forest in the Championship. So yeah, hopefully the experience of Pantelimon will rub off on him and hopefully just take some of the pressure off him that he has faced this season. The next one, we're nearly getting to the bottom of the extended Forest incomings now, but Ash Kandiyaga, 31-year-old Iranian international who's actually been a free agent since leaving Wolfsburg in the summer, but ironically enough has still played at international level despite not having a club. He signed on a short-term contract until the end of the season just to give a bit of reinforcement to the attacking ranks.
Kind of typifies most of these signings. He has experience above the level of Forest. I mean, there are a lot of these players are playing in the Premier League, and especially De Jager. I mean, he's played in Germany with Wolfsburg and Hertha Berlin. He's played at Fulham. I remember some of my Fulham fans did rave about him. I think he was a bit kind of on and off, but I think definitely a Championship. These all players should be competing at the higher end of the Championship. So I think this is really a signal of intent on the whole from Forest plus these signings.
So just a quick one on the loans going out of the City ground as well, then, with Tyler Walker and both Zach Clough going on loan to Bolton Wanderers. Throughout the season, Walker's really stepped up and made quite a few important first team appearances with a couple of goals as well, and Zach Clough, of course, since Karanka's come in, has found himself in the team more, so a bit of a strange one to see them go back out on loan.
I personally think it's probably the perfect decision for both of them, because I mean, Tyler Walker has been playing more this season, he's still not starting, and I think he really needs to be at a club where he's going to play regularly, and Bolton have just signed their star striker Gary Medine, so someone's got to fill that void, and obviously Tyler Walker was earmarked by the Bolton management team as that replacement, so I could see him getting a lot of game time at this level, which he hasn't really had in the past. He's only, I think it's loan spells at Port Vale and Stevenage, so this will be definitely a good chance for him to step up, and I believe he started on the Friday night fixture against Bristol City, so it's a really good sign for Tyler Walker. And looking at Zach Clough, I mean, he hasn't really lived up to the hype really at Forest so far. He's been a bit of a disappointment, a bit hit and miss, not really dazzling as much as he had with Bolton. And I think for the player himself, it's good for him to go back to the club where he was so revered and performed so well at, to maybe kind of get some confidence back. So either to kind of put himself in the shop window and gain Forest some money, or to kind of rejuvenate himself and maybe perform better next season.
So all in all, you could say that Forest had quite a busy day on deadline day, and quite a progressive day. Now the deals didn't stop there, as yesterday it was finally confirmed after Watford terminated his contract on deadline day. 32-year-old midfielder Ben Watson is coming on to the City ground on a 2.5-year deal. So once again, more experience added to the ranks there.
I'm Les Brad, and I'm Notts County's all-time high goals scorer, and you're listening to Over the Trent.
So, Elliot, you're from the Supporters Trust. Obviously, it would be crazy not to get some in-depth insight into, you know, how things are working at the moment, and basically the story of the Trust, mm-hmm. because, you know, the Forest Trust is probably one of the youngest ones around. What is it, like, about 2 years old now? They probably started cropping up around the early 2000s. It's very long overdue at Forest, really, given what's been going on in recent years, that the supporters trust has come about now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, we've just sort of hit a year of membership. So membership went live on the 21st of January last year. So we've just kind of tipped over a year of having live membership. So we are young, like most things at Forest. We seem to be late to the party these days, but long overdue, and a lot's happened in that 12 months, you know, for the trust to go from a situation where we genuinely were having conversations with people about what do we do as an organisation if this football club enters administration. That was a very difficult situation to be in. Fast forward now, there's so many different things have happened. I'm not going to say it's all great, but so many different things have happened that the football club has moved into a completely different space, and we are definitely looking upwards and being more optimistic. But at the same time, as a supporters trust, it's incumbent upon us to guard against that complacency, to build for the times when things may not be great. You know, some of the guys that are around today that are doing positive things may not be here forever.
Mm-hmm. What, something that's always interested me is actually the difference between a supporters trust and a supporters club, because on the face of it they can seem fairly similar organisations. You know, you might even have crossover in what you guys do. So I don't know, maybe just for fans listening, but how would you define the two separate things, or how would you define a supporters trust?
So they are quite distinct, although it's clear as to why you can see that they could be quite similar organisations. I think the way that I'd describe them is very distinct in what they do, and very distinct in what they're trying to achieve, but ultimately we're under the same aim. We want the football club to be the best that it possibly can be. The supporters trust, we're not going to go out and start doing the great things that the supporters club do in terms of away travel, organising end of season events and player awards, the supporters club player of the year award. Our role is much more arm's length. Our role is much more independent in terms of being custodians, if you like, of the supporters' involvement in the long-term future of the football club. What we're all about is seeing that the football club is sustainable. So our job is to promote dialogue between our members and the fan base and the football club, to bring them insight into where's the football club at in terms of sustainability, what are the plans for the future. It's less about us doing things that are perhaps around involvement with players, you know, awards nights and travel and stuff like that. Then the supporters club do a great job of that. The supporters club, very much a spider organisation, they've got loads of sort of ancillary clubs across the world, and again, something that we wouldn't try to replicate because they already do a great job in mm-hmm. that space. What we will try and do is very much offer that critical friend view to the football club, to bring members. It's not about me going and sitting with the chairman and saying I think this or I think that. It's about saying we've got this feedback from our members, this is what they would like to know, mm-hmm. this is what they feel about the changes that you've made, or this is what they feel about the changes you might be about to make. So it's really about promoting that dialogue and promoting the supporters being the heart of the football club. And I guess to wrap it up, if you look at the supporters trust model, it's really built on the kind of model that you'd see in Germany, where it's mandated in law that supporters own 51% of the club. And really that's something that I think in this country we've probably overshot, certainly in my lifetime, but I would love to see some kind of legislation that means that supporters have a mandatory seat at the table, because right now it's goodwill. So the chairman meets us and talks to us on goodwill rather than it being mandated in law.
Have you found that the new ownership are very cooperative, willing to establish dialogue? We saw when they first came in, and Nicholas Randall's statement, they're really willing to get involved with the city's organisations, especially the trust and even the universities they've mentioned.
I've met Nick several times, sat down on behalf of members and had conversations with him. We've run surveys to members that we've presented that the outcome of those to Nick, and also to Dave Cook, who from a commercial perspective is obviously very interested in what supporters think of the commercial offering, the matchday experience. So you know that those conversations, not just the fact they've happened, but the nature of those conversations, very open, very personable. You know, we're building a good rapport with the football club, and it's really about cementing that now, so that whenever I move on and whenever the people that are involved in the trust now move forward, that remains. So we're really pursuing something now that's a bit more formal, trying to get a memorandum of understanding in place so that we know when we meet, how we'll discuss things, what we'll discuss, how things get on that agenda. But they've been totally open. I mean, some people may be aware that we applied for asset of community value status for the City Ground. They backed that. So when that went into Rushcliffe Borough Council, council, that came with a backing from the club to say we're totally behind this. And ultimately that effectively is saying, look, we support this because we would of course have supporters at the table if we ever thought of doing anything huge to the City Ground.
Yeah,
and that's a massive thing.
Does that mean you'll be involved in if there's ever potential redevelopment of stands at the City Ground?
I'd certainly believe so and hope so. And I think what that would look like again is getting member and fan input into here's the things we're trying to do and that we're looking to do from an infrastructure perspective.
You said you meet Nicholas Randall, the chairman, quite a lot. What it seems like quite an elusive figure now, Mr. Marinakis, who is the owner of the club. Obviously, he had a big interview on the BBC when he first came in, but since then, there's really been no sign of him. Do you see it as very much him putting Nicholas Randall in the driving seat? Have you even seen Mr. Marinakis around the club?
No, so I'm aware that Mr. Marinakis has been a couple of times, but I think very much on the quiet and to sort of under 23 games. That's clearly a deliberate thing. Mm-hmm. There is this thing in the background about Olympiacos and his involvement with Olympiacos and it not being seen that he's favouring one club over the other. Yeah. And from an Olympiacos perspective, not being seen that, you know, he's got this nice shiny new toy in England. Yeah. That said, I think that the new regime have certainly got an approach of we will take actions in the background. Nick will be the front man in terms of the football club and the comms in terms of senior level comms from the football club. My understanding, though, is that day to day there is a CEO, Yanis, who is very much driving the football club forward, and it perhaps took a little bit of time for him to get bedded in and move on with his role, but I think that now is gathering pace, and you'll see a lot of stuff happening, and it's boring stuff that happens behind the scenes, but you'll see them advertising for a head of ticketing. Simon's come in as head of marketing from Adidas. You've got guys coming in, they want a head of IT, and you know there's lots of things happening behind the scenes that just weren't there before, and they're boring. Then it's not an exciting new striker that we're signing, but if you look at the crumbling infrastructure around the club, around the ticket office, these are roles that drive an organisation forward.
Just to put sort of the role of the Supporters Trust in context, it seemed like you've mentioned how it's a very much hands-off approach and sort of establishing just a dialogue, but it did seem like during when the Fawaz Out campaign sort of reached its peak, over a year ago now, it seemed like the Trust was very prominent in that. How key a role do you think the Trust played in all of that change?
So during that time, and I remember being stood in that car park as Stan Collymore bowled in, you know, professing to save us from all the evils. You know, at that time, talking to Radio Nottingham, I think it was on the day we played Bristol City and the protest that was taking place there, I was very clear that the Trust were not about protest. You know, at that time, we didn't know for sure that Fawaz was going to go. We knew that the sale to the Americans had fallen through. But the Trust can never really be about protest. Now, the reason that I say that is that if you look at where clubs have got entrenched in protest, so you look at clubs that I have a lot of respect for, Blackburn, Coventry, Charlton, you can absolutely get behind why they're angry and why they want to protest, but I'm not convinced it ever achieves much of an outcome.
Yeah.
And had Fawaz not had gone, we'd have continued to push for dialogue with him. Whether that dialogue was going to be fruitful, whether it was going to be us sat there with him on his phone if he actually agreed to meet us, is kind of irrelevant. We have to speak to these people.
And of course, if you protest, you're going to put that person off from speaking.
You're just driving a wedge, you know, and what does it may make people feel better to stand in a car park and shout and swear, but it doesn't actually achieve a huge amount. And sometimes, you know, you've got to sit down and talk to people that you might not like.
Yeah. I guess that brings us on to sort of your personal story as a fan, as a member of the Trust. You know, basically a lot of fans maybe took a bystanding view on all of this. They might have been active on Twitter or in the car park, but you personally are fairly unique in that you've been one of the ones that have got really involved and, you know, took it by the scruff of the neck to try and create change. What is your story as a Forest fan and becoming a member of the Trust?
So in terms of a Trust member, I attended the open meeting that took place at the Albert Hall. And at that point, it was very much getting towards a kind of, if I don't do something like that or find some other outlet for my love of the club, I probably fall away, you know, probably sort of start to drift away. I've got now two young kids, had one at the time. You know, and it's difficult, it's a pull on your time, and you think, is this really worth it? We've got this guy at the helm who seems intent on driving the club into the floors. And so I attended that meeting, offered some help, and very much offered some help on the periphery. Long story short, I ended up on the interim board and ended up chairing the trust. So I've kind of gone the opposite way than I'd expected, because I'd intended to offer a little bit of help and then step away. But it's difficult to say no to something like this when you see the opportunity to drive some change. You need a tin hat, because some people don't always see the good in what you're trying to do, but I can hand on heart say that this is not about me, it's not about any kind of personal agenda. I just want the club to be the best it possibly can be, for my kids, for my kids' kids, you know, for everybody who in a city like this in years to come doesn't have to go through the 20 years that I've gone through, because they've been pretty grim. Mm.
And of course, a lot has changed since the new ownership has come in, since the trust has been established. What have been the key moments that stand out for you, maybe the symbolic moments that signified, you know, a lot has changed, things are different now?
So I think you mentioned Nicholas before, Nicholas Randall as chairman. That's symbolic because it has an outstanding pedigree, and I think you have to question, when someone like that comes into your football club and agrees to take on that role, they wouldn't do that if they didn't see the potential in the football club going forward. Some of the boring stuff that I've mentioned around the periphery, so actually putting a structure in place. But I think the other thing that you really have to look at is the way that people at the football club, and I don't just mean people that we would know by name, but everybody, the way that they're treated day to day. Because over the last 5 years, or the previous 5 years, everybody at the football club was treated really badly. You know, people that have kept that place afloat. And the embracing of the former players, the guys that won the European Cup, is fantastic, and it's great that that's happening again. But the sense I get when I go to the club is that it's a place that people want to work again. It's a sense that people are actually going into work and thinking, this is a good place to be, and they've been through some pretty tough times, and they should receive a lot of the credit for sticking with it.
Yeah. Do you think there's a long way to go still?
Yes, yeah, hugely. Football, you know, we look at it as the guys on the pitch, and we beat Arsenal and we think, this is great, we're flying. The reality is that we don't have anywhere near as good a squad as some people may think we've got. We have a lot of rotations of transfer windows before we get it into a place where it needs to be. The football club, from a commercial perspective, has a lot of work. The infrastructure, the ground, for example, needs a lot of work. So there's a long way to go, but we're still not in a place where we're not in with a chance of getting back amongst the elite. There's still that opportunity for a brand as strong as Nottingham Forest to get back there and to establish themselves. You know, and in some ways, TV money is counted against clubs like Forest, but in other ways, it could end up being our saviour, in that in another world where TV money wasn't part of football, we would probably be cut adrift now because of the mismanagement of the club. And if it wasn't for the opportunity to get back in the Premier League and acquire some of that wealth, which we can then use to further our brand, I think we'd be really struggling.
Hopeful, though? Do you think the current ownership are equipped to you know, deliver?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And I think it's about insulating against the bumps in the road. And you know, there are things that happen. You know, I probably wasn't the only person that raised eyebrows quite highly at the removal of Mark as manager. But, you know, those really are kind of minor things against a much larger strategy. And I'm confident that they are looking to implement something that long-term will result in the football club getting back to where it should be. But ultimately, with my supporters' trust hat on, it's about sustainability. So it's not about shooting for the Premier League and having that glory. It's about having a football club that its outgoings are lower than its income, and that we can afford to go forward.
Yeah, there was that recent data release, wasn't there, where clubs are spending, they're spending more than they receive.
On
is
wages.
That right?
Yeah, and we're right at the bottom. That's horrific. And it's a couple of years old, so we can hope that some of that has got better. You know, we're not paying Ross McCormack £40,000 a week to do nothing now. But some of it hasn't gone away. You know, we've still got guys like Jack Hobbs, bless him, who's played 49 games in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, the holy grail of contracts. He only works 1 week out of five.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to Over the Trent podcast.
Now on to the weekend results, and we'll start with Forest, who lost 2-0 away at Fulham. Now, a bit of an interesting one, because they'd lost 3-0 at home to Preston the week before, the game before, so suddenly a 2-0 defeat away at high-flying Fulham didn't seem so bad, did it, guys?
No, I think that Preston performance was really not great, but they did go to Fulham, who are one of the form teams in the Championship at the moment, and maybe they went there with more hope than expectation, and to see Fulham get two relatively late goals, it wasn't the worst performance from Forest, and I'm sure they can take some positives from the fact that they were able to keep Fulham out for quite an extended period of time, and although they did lose in the end, I think it's the performance that will certainly please Karanka more than, as you say, the embarrassment of the midweek game against Preston. So it's certainly an improvement, but they do need to start scoring goals.
Yeah, and 2-0 obviously away at Fulham isn't a terrible result, so there's no alarm bells ringing or anything like that. The only thing you would say is that Forest do really need to start picking up points now, because that gap between the relegation zones and themselves, where they're sort of lying stagnant, is ever closing. So they'll need to improve on that front, and hopefully those signings can help them do so. Now, moving over the Trent, to a bit of a bumper day at Meadow Lane, Zoe. You were down.
Yeah.
The highest crowd of this century recorded at Meadow Lane, thanks to Alan Hardy bringing in an incentive of £2 a ticket, £2 for crew, to celebrate his 1 year at the club. Meadow Lane rocking?
Yeah, I was there. It was so loud, and I think Mark Crossley said at the press conference yesterday, them going 1-0 down was probably the best thing that could have happened to them, because the crowd just got straight behind them. And from then on, County were pressing. County played really, really well. You know, there was short periods where crew put a bit of pressure on, but for the most part, County just absolutely dominated. I went to the press conference before the game, and Kevin said there was no pressure, like he didn't want to perform, but he must have been glad that they ended up scoring 4. Against like 17,000 fans, which obviously is just mega for League Two.
In League Two, yeah, and it was actually only second to Portsmouth as the highest attendance of any game in League Two or League One over the weekend by a couple of hundred. So credit to Alan Hardy there. Now, they've got the goals themselves as well. I mean, the performance, some of the football was outstanding, and just a word to one of the January recruits, Noor Hussein, with an absolute thunderbolt that has won League Two Goal of the Week. Now, how did that look from your perspective, Zoe?
It was just, I don't think anybody expected it, but as soon as it hit, it's just one of those you don't save. Like, you knew, and everyone in the ground obviously just thought it was amazing. But yeah, he actually had a really, really good game. I think he's settled in really well, because he's had a few more weeks than the other signings, so he's settled in really
and
well.
And you spoke to him, of course, didn't you? How did he seem when you spoke to him? Did he seem like quite a grounded individual, or does he seem like he's seen the Premier League hype?
No, I think he was just more happy to have a permanent place, because obviously he's been, in and out on loan and hasn't really done much in the Premier League. So I think he's signed a permanent deal now, so I think he just seems more happy to have it somewhere that he can focus on and stay. And obviously he's been getting places in the team and he's doing really well.
Yeah, and he came in for a bit of flack when he was playing alongside Matty Virtue and Liam Noble in front of the three-man midfield. So nice to see him not being deterred by that and carrying on playing his game. And the other goals scored by Elliot Hewitt, he got a brace, the Welshman, and a late goal for debutant and of course deadline day signing Mason Bennett. Now that's a great result and a well needed win for County, Alex, as things get a little bit bit squeaky bum time at the top of League Two now.
Yeah, it was getting a bit tense around the County game recently. I mean, a lot of, once again, looking at this kind of social media, the fans were kind of getting on the back after a few poor results, obviously losing to Crawley, Exeter and drawing against Lincoln, all kind of contributed to the fans getting a little bit kind of riled up, really. I mean, it is going to be very tight at the top of the table. I think there's only County only 4 points away from dropping out of the playoffs positions, let alone automatic positions. So I think if any County fan had been offered top half this season, they would have snapped your hand off at the start of the season. So I think long may the success continue, but any position will do this year. I think if they can secure a playoff place and they build on next season, that'd be a great success. But let's not forget, this is the majority of the squad that almost went down last year. You haven't really been able to sign that many extra players.
Just to counter that, though, wouldn't you think that after, sitting top for large periods of the season and the way that Kevin Nolan and Alan Hardy have both spoke about promotion, and they've, at times this season Alan Hardy's talked about it as if it's a foregone conclusion, do you think it wouldn't be a disappointment if they didn't get promoted now this season with the progress they've made?
Yeah, it definitely would be a disappointment. I mean, you're always going to be disappointed when you're being second. You kind of get spoilt on the success, but you've got to forget they do have an ageing squad. I mean, especially Stead and Amiobi, who have been up top for them for the majority of the season. We always said that they were going to tie, and I think we said it in the podcast before the Christmas holidays, that they were going to struggle over that period because of the amount of games that they had to play. So I don't think it's any surprise that we've seen a little dip, but I think the result against Crewe is a much needed win, and hopefully will spur them on to hopefully achieve the new high expectations set on them.
Zoe, you've already touched on it, but you spoke to Big Norm yesterday, Mark Crosley, ahead of the game. How is he feeling, and what's their sort of expectations from the fixture?
He seemed really confident. Cardiff have actually let them use their training ground.
Oh, wow.
when they go, which I think is a bit of a dig. But yeah, he seemed really confident. He says he knows that Swansea are going to have a lot of possession, but the second half performance of the first leg, he said if they play like that, they've got more than a good chance of causing an upset. He thinks, like you said already, if they get on the end of a set play, then they could probably nick a goal. And he, of course, used the cliche of it's the FA Cup, anything can happen.
I'm Alan Hardy, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Well, the win, first and foremost, good to get back on winning, on a winning trail, you know, in front of such a big crowd. Just what we wanted, leading us into the cup tie as well. So, lads are full of confidence now. They've got a win under their back, so we can go, obviously, to Swansea with a bit of belief.
Terrific crowd, obviously, with the cheap tickets. And I suppose from a coach's, a player's perspective, from the team's perspective, important that you did put on that show for them.
It is. That's what we want every week, and that's what the players want. And as you can see from Saturday, that it gives you a massive lift to have the support that we got, and even going 1-0 down, which I think probably did us the world of good, to be honest. It made us start ticking a little bit, and then once we got a foot in the game, there was only one winner at the end, and we had chance after chance. So it was good to please the crowd. Hopefully we can get a few more every week now, having seen that display. That's the intentions anyway, and I believe there was a few half season tickets sold after that game as well, so that was the intentions behind it, and everything worked well.
Because the manager was saying after the match that the more that do come back and support you over the what's effectively becoming the run-in now, isn't it, yeah, towards the end of the season, the better chance you'll have of being successful.
Yeah, I was looking at the league table this morning before I left to come to work, and it's very, very tight up there, so it makes them 3 points on Saturday all the more important. And with six of the top eight playing each other this weekend and us going to Barnet, then obviously Saturday's game becomes very, very important as well, because teams are going to be dropping points around us. And I'd be a liar if we say, listen, we already concentrate on what we're going to do. That's true, but you can't help but look at it, and it's getting nail-biting at the moment, and it's getting really, really tight. Wickham scored two late goals. You look at the result, but then you look at the times they actually scored their goals, and it puts you on a little bit of a downer. But now we are concentrating on us. We've got a good team spirit going at the moment. We've got back to form with the draw against Swansea and the win on Saturday. So it's all systems go again now from now on.
As we mentioned, that the game before Saturday was Swansea, and a great result in that one to give you the replay down in South Wales. Mm. What are your reflections on that first game?
Great cup tie. Started off, probably paid them a little bit too much respect, but when the gaffer got stuck into them at half time, we came out and we looked a different team. And when we saw the highlights on TV on Saturday night, it looked like, you know, I think we had the better chances to go on and win it. George's header and the shot from George, and the chances kept coming, balls flashing across the box. And I think in the end we deserved what we got, and I think we deserve to be going down to Swansea and still being in the cup tie.
And it gives you a huge occasion, doesn't it? National TV coverage as well. I mean, it's great for the players, it's great for the club.
Listen, this club's had a massive transformation over the last 12 months, and we all know it's down to what the chairman's done. He's given us everything we want. We've got new facilities, we've got a brand new office up there now, where we can do loads and loads more work towards getting a result on a Saturday, and everything's just flowing really, really nicely. But we all know what football's like. If you take your foot off the gas, then it's got a habit of kicking you where it hurts. So we'll be fully focused. We've got a good team of staff, good team of players, so I'm very confident that we can achieve what we set out to achieve at the beginning of the season.
What about the game at the Liberty Stadium? As you mentioned, maybe show them a little bit too much respect early on in the first game. How do you think this one will pan out?
Well, hopefully the players will take the second half performance on board, and we can transform that to the kickoff, really, and show that we have actually got nothing to lose. A lot of people say it's a free hit, really, again. And I think we can look at it like that in a way. It is a free hit.
we can go out there and express ourselves. There'll be a few changes and a few of the lads coming into the team. There's no doubt about it. The main focus is on getting promotion this season. But it's been lovely having this FA Cup run. And that's why the FA Cup, to me, it's always been special, and it still is. And I'm buzzing for tomorrow night already again, and I'm buzzing for the players, because they deserve to be out there playing against the Premiership team the way that they've performed all season.
You can catch that tonight. It's 8:05 kickoff, and it's actually been televised on BBC, which is going to be a massive windfall for the League Two clubs. Zoe, they were speaking about that yesterday and saying that this cup run has been really beneficial for them, both on the pitch and off the pitch, in terms of finances.
Yeah. Obviously, they're on BT as well, and getting a replay. I think, you know, they obviously want to get through, but they did kind of say yesterday, if they don't, they have got quite
they've
a bit of money
it.
From it.
They've so, enjoyed it so yeah. far anyway.
The long journey to Swansea for the big FA Cup match began at Meadow Lane, where the fans gathered to get going. The travelling fans were in high spirits for the 400-mile round trip to the Liberty Stadium.
Come in, boys!
It's all about faith. It's the FA Cup, it's magic, so fingers crossed we'll do well, I think.
How are you feeling about the game today?
Very excited, looking forward to it, and hope we're going to do as well as we did on Saturday. Well, when we played this first half and Saturday. Saturday they were brilliant, really were. So we're all fingers crossed, aren't we?
Yes.
Hopeful. And some of their players have been injured. It's a shame, but they won't be there today.
We'll be special as well. Which players are you looking forward to seeing?
Well, the whole team. We love it.
We love all the team.
We think the team are doing great. They've just moulded. It's great. You can see that they're happy together. They're working well with the trainer. And we go to one or two things with the manager that he puts on extra. Like when the draws were on, we all went in. And it's so enthusiastic. Everybody is enthusiastic. It's so different, isn't it? It's lovely. It's a pleasure to be part of Notts County.
Yes. And how has Alan Hardy changed things at the club, you know, in terms of ticket prices, things like that?
Well, he's doing that. He's doing what he can. He's working his way round. He did say that at the last meeting, didn't
yes.
he? Working his way round. He started in the children's end. He's improving everything. He's putting offers on. I mean, like Saturday, it was fantastic. £2 a ticket, and we had all those people there. Never. I mean, we've made a record, haven't we? So it was fantastic. And he's lovely. He was going out as I came in to go into the ground today, and he was going... But he associates with everybody. It's wonderful. You feel that he cares.
It's an exciting day. It's an exciting day for everybody, especially the people that are travelling as well. Obviously, we get to see it on telly anyway. But for us, we're going to enjoy the day. Got nothing to lose, so it's just enjoying the day.
Well, we're joined here with Doug Pullen, the supporter liaison officer at Notts County. You've enjoyed the trip down today, haven't you, Doug?
It's been a really good trip, and some really good people on the coach, all very well behaved. We had a quiz, and that was good fun running it, and just happy to be here. Fabulous stadium.
Yeah, fourth round of the FA Cup. Obviously, the replay was 1-1, but what's your predictions ahead of tonight?
Well, it's always going to be a tough one, isn't it? But you never know. This team is capable of springing surprises, and tonight might be one such night.
Now, you're a supporter liaison officer. Just tell us a little bit more about what that kind of role entails.
Sure, it's really acting as a bridge between fan and clubs in both directions. We're very fortunate to have Alan Hardy as our owner and chairman. He's very good on social media, and quite frankly, he's his own supporter liaison officer. So it's a pleasure doing the job at the moment.
Well, 392 miles this round trip is, Danny, to Swansea City, but we've made half of the journey. We're finally here at the Liberty Stadium ahead of kick-off, the FA Cup fourth round replay. What are your thoughts prior to the game?
I think Notts County have a chance. I know Swansea have had an upturn recently, having beaten Liverpool, beaten Arsenal, but Notts County flying high in League Two, they've brought a lot of fans from Nottingham. And the players will be up for this. They've got nothing to lose. They can throw everything they can at this Swansea side. And, you know, they drew 1-1. You know, this is a replay. They've shown that they can match them. And hopefully something special might happen tonight.
Of course, over 500 Magpie supporters making the long journey down from Nottingham. Fantastic credit there has to go to the Notts County fan base and to the marketing team for enabling all these people to go down to the Liberty Stadium at such a relatively cheap price as well for tickets and travel.
Yeah, it's amazing. So for students, match tickets are only £10 and then the coach travel is £23. So for £33 you're getting a full travel and ticket, which is unbelievable. And it goes along with the rest of the things that Alan Hardy's been doing with Notts County this season. £2 tickets for Crewe just last week where Notts County won 4-1, so a pretty amazing result for that game. And, you know, having done reduced ticket prices throughout the season, a lot of fan initiatives, a lot of, you know, events as well, like for the fifth round draw, they had an event, things like that. Getting the kind of club, the community spirit behind the club, and it definitely affects it. You can see the number of fans here today.
Of course, coming into this game on the back of a 4-1 win, a very much needed win at Meadow Lane, but do you think this cup match may, in a way, distract them from the League Four, maybe in a good way, perhaps?
You could say the cup runs maybe had a bit of an effect on the league form. Before Crewe, they only got 1 point in the last three games. But it's cup runs like this that are so special. You know, this is what the fans come out for. Big matches against Premier League opposition. And you can call it a distraction all you want, but at the end of the day, this is the stuff that people remember, these trips. So I think it's really important. It's brilliant to be here.
And Notts have salvaged the goal back. It's now 3-1 at the Liberty Stadium. A goal courtesy of Nur Hussein, the Afghan midfielder, recently signed from Crystal Palace. The ball broke, a loose ball broke around the edge of the D, and Hussein swept home with a curled left-footed strike from the edge of the box. 3-1 now. Anything can happen with around 65 minutes left in this game. And it's another goal in the first half, right at the end of the opening 45 minutes, courtesy of another Tammy Abraham strike. It's two for him and two for Nathan Dyer in the first half. The goal coming, of course, just after Nur Hussein pulled one back for Notts. A brilliant left-footed curling strike from the edge of the 18-yard box, going in off the post. But it's a goal right at the end of the half from Tammy Abraham. The ball came in after good work from Jordan Ayew on the right-hand side. A little bit of trickery, beating Carl Dickinson, the left-back. And then the ball came in and was swept home to the right bottom right-hand corner by Tammy Abraham, past Adam Collin, who again had no chance. Half-time then, 4-1 to Swansea City in this fourth-round FA Cup replay. Well, if you didn't think there'd be any more in this game and that Swansea would get completely bored and fed up of scoring, you're wrong, because it's 8-1 and a debutant has scored. Daniel James, who's come on for the home side, got a half volley, just bounced up off the turf very, very kindly for him. And the biggest cheer of the night you've just heard there is because Notts had a corner, which I believe was only their second of the game, definitely their first in the second half. But anyway, back to Swansea's eighth goal. It was hit off the surface, a half volley from the debutant into the bottom right-hand corner, past Adam Collin, and it's now 8-1 to the home side. This is quite a drubbing for Kevin Nolan's team. But the Notts fans certainly are in high spirits. That's possibly the only positive thing you could say is left about this performance. Certainly hasn't been great on the pitch, but in the stands, the Notts fans have definitely done themselves very proud by staying vocal. Well, 8-1 here. It's finished at the Liberty Stadium. With the Magpies haven't flown too far against the Swans here in this fourth round FA Cup replay. Two goals, both from Dyer and from Abraham in the first half. And a consolation at that point from Nur Hussein made the scores 4-1 going into the break. Then the Swans ran riot with goals from Routledge, from Norton, an absolutely stunning strike from Carroll, and then a goal for Daniel James on his debut for the home side. So it's 8-1, Notts County crash out of the FA Cup. Partially a blessing in disguise, as they now can concentrate on domestic league matters. Nonetheless, a drubbing here for Kevin Nolan's team. The county fans making for the exit in their droves. And we go again this weekend, back in League Two action.
I guess it's just a cup, so I've got to look to focus on the league, but just felt like there was no fight there at all, so a bit disappointed.
And what do you make of all the fans coming along and travelling for the game?
Really good, like throughout the whole game. I think that was what kept it going, support and just having a laugh at the end. So at least it wasn't an all wasted journey, a bit of fun cheering and just having a laugh.
So that's all from us this week on Over the Trent. Thank you for listening once again. You can follow all updates from press conferences, including video updates, press conference updates, transfer news and team news at Over the Trent Pod on Twitter. You can follow our podcasts on SoundCloud, Mixcloud and Audioboom, just Over the Trent Pod. Thanks very much and we'll see you next week.